You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Open our eyes to the needs of the world. Bring all nations and races and classes together, then this old world will be livable again through our goodness and humanity. Those words come from Elizabeth van Mullekom-Tjerak from the International Nativity Crib Association, which organises the nativity scene all over the world with some diversity. We'll hear about that a little later. So welcome to our service of worship, and especially warm welcome to those visiting today. It will enrich our commitment to plurality. We have members of the Multi-Faith Association present today, and our speakers come from the Multi-Faith Association. Now, my name's Jenny Dyster. I'm the recently appointed lay leader of this congregation. Our Unitarian Church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. Our principles adhere to us. They're on the banner close to the organ. And you could probably think, reading them, that, well, most people could agree with those. You don't need to come to church to come to those conclusions. And that's true. The principles are consistent with an atheist, a humanist, or a religious perspective. We don't prescribe your theology or direct you on a spiritual journey. Your path is yours to follow, and the role of the church is to support you on that path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world. In common with the other religious faiths visiting us here today, we come to worship, to raise to worth the things that matter most to us, and to be with each other, to support each other, to celebrate community. And today, that concept of community is just a little more diverse than usual. It's a great joy, as last year we had to cancel. Please join us after the service for coffee, tea, a light lunch, and conversation. There will be no collection, which those of you who visited the church before would be expecting toward the end of the service, and that's because of the COVID concerns. And what we've got instead is a cash point in the foyer and also a chalice for cash. So that's a little bit of a difference that you may or may not have been expecting. Now, today we don't have a story, but we do have slides for all ages. When I went to Tamil Nadu, which is the southernmost state of India, for the second time, we were there for Christmas. Well, there was no roast bird or pudding or crackers. We had a tip-top Indian meal with mango lassi instead of wine. It was in the middle of the day, which is when we do the big meal for Christmas Day at home. But what surprised me were the illuminated stars in the windows of homes at night. There couldn't be this many Christians, I thought. And indeed, I did discover that many of the Hindus tended to join in or at least acknowledge the special celebrations of their neighbours, be they Christian or otherwise. And the star is particularly appropriate as opposed to the Santa or reindeer or the Nativity, because Diwali precedes Christmas, and that's the festival of light, the triumph of good over evil. And the star is something that's in common, really, with both traditions. What I have to share with people of all ages and traditions today are some slides of the Nativity, the birth of Jesus Christ. We know that St. Francis of Assisi sought and gained permission from the reigning Pope to stage a live Nativity with real people and animals. But nativity scenes precede that. This one was found in the catacombs of Rome and dates from about 400 AD. As Christianity dominated Europe, the figures in the nativity lightened up, and to this day you see a lot of blonde, blue-eyed, holy families depicted. An Australian woman, Elizabeth van Mullekom-Schirep, who was a leading light of the International Nativity Crib Association, was a keen supporter of diversity and promoted sharing. Now, Ursula Paniak is a Yupik Eskimo from Chivak, Alaska. Yupik is Western Eskimo, related culturally to the Inuit people. The faces are freeze-bleached seal. The eyes are trade beads, beaver beard, wolf ruff on Mary's dress, and spotted steel muckmucks over the mitts of Joseph. The crib is a little birch basket, and Joseph's robe is made from Ursula's husband's heating pad cover. By contrast, this nativity is created anew every year by a Mexican clay artist and displayed in the family's shop window. Our old minister, Rob McPherson, used to say it was unnecessary to accept the traditional Christian theology on the identity and significance of Jesus to appreciate the story of the Christmas Nativity. And my final slide should show that. It's from the Humanist Society in America. Every child is holy. It is with great pleasure that I conduct this year's multi-faith celebration at our Unitarian Church. For those of you unfamiliar with Unitarian history, and that probably includes some Unitarians, our particular take on Christianity emerges clearly during the Reformation, when the young king of Romania was aghast at the violence that accompanied differences of opinion during the Reformation. So much so that he passed the Edict of Torda, which was essentially an edict of freedom of religious belief and expression. It lasted just long enough to establish Unitarianism as a state-sanctioned religion. Sadly, the spirit of the age took over again, and Ferenc David died in a Romanian jail for denying the doctrine of the Trinity. Somehow Unitarianism hung on in various countries. To this day, Unitarians have accepted diversity within and beyond their own congregations, so it's fitting we share an annual service with our friends from multi-faith. This year's multi-faith service was mooted before Omicron emerged, and initially we had a back-to-normal headset about planning. Well, we had to pull our horns in and proceed with baby steps toward normality today. Our shared lunch will be more like shared snacks, so there'll be no accidental sharing of utensils. We'll have fewer speakers and we'll miss a few familiar faces due to COVID-related concerns. Incomplete vaccinations, surgery next week, hay fever or cold symptoms that need to be checked out, and so on. But my joy is we can proceed. I'm going to invite Philippa to begin with a Buddhist prayer. Philippa is the current chairperson of the Multi-Faith Association. Welcome, Philippa.
Thank you very much, Jenny. And thank you also to the Unitarian Church for upholding the hospitality to many of us from many different places who've come and used this as a gathering place for celebrations. I was pondering on a Buddhist prayer for today, and many of you may know that there's quite a lot of thought that goes into Buddhism on living, dying, reincarnation, and how we hold ourselves while we're alive, particularly to try and reach out with compassion to others. And I find it interesting that both in Buddhism and in Christianity, there is a sense of what Thich Nhat Hanh, Theravadan Buddhist, calls interbeing, and what Pope Francis called integral ecology. So it's the sense that while we are blessed to be humans in today's world, even our very daily life is intimately connected with many other living beings, as small as microbes and bacteria in the soil that help plants take up nutrients, which helps feed us. The cycle of life is intimately interwoven. And for us as humans, we've been given that responsibility to care for the earth and for each other. So with that in mind, I actually found a reading which relates to the importance of how we address death. So this is a book by Lama Zopa Rinpoche called The Joy of Compassion. Similarly, you cannot receive even good rebirths or happiness in life without depending on the existence of suffering other beings. Because even though the Buddha taught the practice of morality, the cause of happiness in future lives, without the basis, the existence of suffering sentient beings, there's no way to practice it. It's on the basis of recognizing other sentient beings that we make vows not to kill, to steal, to engage in sexual misconduct, to lie, and so forth. Sentient beings are the foundation of our vows, not to give this harm or that. Without the existence of sentient beings, we can't engage in these practices, the cause of happiness. Without the existence of sentient beings, we have no way to achieve any happiness whatsoever, no way to experience the slightest comfort in our daily lives, any enjoyment or sense pleasure up to the highest enlightenment. Every single happiness we ever experience comes to us through the kindness of sentient beings, depends upon them. If you practice Dharma, thinking about impermanence and death allows you to overcome death itself. When you start to meditate on impermanence and death, you are afraid of death. But this fear makes you practice the Dharma. Then, through practicing the Dharma, you gain realizations of renunciation, of samsara, bodhicitta, and emptiness. And in that way, you gradually overcome your fear of death. Eventually, you may become free of even death itself. As a great Buddhist teacher, Milarepa, once said, "Afraid of death, I fled to the mountains, where I realized the ultimate nature of the primordial mind. Now, even should I die, I will be unafraid." And then I just got two short readings, one from the Dhammapada, which is a classic Buddhist text. The words of Dhamma are words of truth. The message of the Buddha is a message of joy. He found a treasure, and he wants us to follow the path that leads to the treasure he found. He tells man that he's in deep darkness, but he also tells him that there is a path that leads to the light. He wants us to arise from a life of dreams into a higher life, where humans love and do not hate, where humans help and do not hurt. His appeal is universal because he appeals to reason and to the universal in us all. It is us who must make the effort. The great of the past only shows the way. He achieves supreme harmony of vision and wisdom by placing spiritual truth on the crucial test of experience, and only our own experience can satisfy the mind of us as modern humans. He wants us to watch and be awake, and he wants us to seek and to find. And in a Unitarian sense, my one short poem is from Lunig, the poet. Dear God, we give thanks for places of simplicity and peace. Let us find such a place within ourselves. We give thanks for places of refuge and beauty. Let us find such a place within ourselves. We give thanks for places of nature's truth and freedom, of joy, inspiration and renewal, places where all creatures may find acceptance and belonging. Let us search for these places in the world, in ourselves and in others. Let us restore them. Let us strengthen and protect them, and let us create them. May we mend this outer world according to the truth of our inner life, and may our souls be shaped and nourished by nature's eternal wisdom. Amen.
The next guest I only found out about last night, as the previous one had had to drop out. So I'm very grateful that Michael has stepped in on behalf of the Sukhyo Mahikari movement. To my knowledge, this is a first contact for us. I had not met Michael until this morning and have only these few biographical details to share with you. Michael has been a practitioner for 34 years. He was an Australia Oceania Youth Coordinator for 3 years and is currently a serving member of the Adelaide Centre Maintenance Committee and a monthly ceremony coordinator. So I'd like to welcome Michael to the microphone.
Thank you very much, Jenny, and good morning, everybody. Suku'amaki Kauri is an international, non-denominational spiritual organisation. It's dedicated to developing a civilization of eternal peace and prosperity for humankind. We have centres in 75 countries around the world, with our headquarters in Takayama, Japan. And our current spiritual leader is Kor Okada, and he is presently chairman of the Japanese Interreligious Cooperation, which is like interfaith. Its mission is to transcend the barriers of religion and religious denominations. Now, my talk today, I've taken extracts from two of our spiritual virtue books. We actually have three, and there's humility, acceptance of the will of God, and gratitude, which we believe are all important virtues that we should practice and embrace. In these extracts, I aim to highlight our spiritual relationship with God and how we are innately spiritual beings, and that through awakening we have important missions to fulfill in creating a heavenly civilization on this earth. In November 1989, the Suku'amaki Kauri organisation hosted an international conference on the true nature of human beings and the need to promote spirituality. And in that, we looked at the spiritual makeup of human beings. And basically, we believe that there's three components. First of all, there's the physical body, and that's visible, so there's no room for doubt of its existence. Second, there is the mind, and that's related to what we call the astral body, and which is made up of invisible cells. The astral body is only partly materialised, and it's likened to an ectoplasm. The third, in the depths of the astral body, we find what we call the spiritual body, and this consists of a collection of spiritual cells. And these ultra-infinitesimal particles, or spiritual cells, exist at a level that's even deeper than the astral cells. Now, modern physics has yet to explore this realm, but from our teachings we know that these spiritual particles definitely exist in the universe, and the spiritual body is closely related to what we call the innermost attitude, and this is found in the depths of the mind. And this is where our practice of radiating true light comes into practice. We believe that humankind's progress can be greatly facilitated by focusing on and projecting the light of God, which abounds in the universe. This true light, which is radiated from the palm of the hand, helps human beings purify their souls and elevate their spiritual level. We believe that light purifies the depths of the spiritual body and the innermost attitude. Thus, with the physical body enveloping this astral body and spiritual body, these three bodies are intimately interconnected and commune with each other. So a spiritual master explained that the entire universe functions on principles. There's the law of karma, cause and effect, the principle of graduality or step by step, and importantly, the law of spirit, mind and body. This means that only because of the existence of the spiritual body, which it serves as a spiritual blueprint, that the physical body comes into existence as an exact copy of the spiritual body. However, because we're not able to see God with our physical eyes, we can have difficulty understanding sometimes that there is a God, and some people do. So I'd like to just quote that I think elucidates well, acceptance of the God. If we really observe nature in its marvellous complexity and diversity, we are bound to perceive the hand of God at work. We cannot but feel the great will of the God directing things. Consider a moment the natural elements of rain, wind, snow and storm, the progression of the four seasons, and the perfect balance of day and night as well as the cycle of life and death. Consider the fact that the Earth orbits around the Sun in 365 days like clockwork. All this should help us to awaken to the fact that nature is ruled and administered as a harmonious whole in accordance with the will of the unseen God who called himself I Am That I Am. How can anybody doubt the existence of providence? Simply by observing the arrangements manifest in nature, we're able to clearly perceive that there is an invisible cosmic will at work in the universe, and this belongs to the parent God. The teachings go on to describe God in a most eloquent and awe-inspiring way. God is pure energy. The invisible power can be likened to the power of subatomic particles or electromagnetic waves. As it's said in the Bible, God is the Alpha and the Omega, not bound by human ideas of large or small. He moves about the heavens in perfect freedom, nurturing the sun and the earth, the mountains, the rivers, plants, with unconditional love. That love is the manifestation of God's heavenly will. Therefore, if we want to live our lives with complete openness to and accepting of the loving will of the parent God, we need to live in accordance with the laws of God and not be at cross purposes with each other. Rather, he wants human beings to join hands with him and work together with him to promote the eternal prosperity of heaven and earth. Now, Sukhyo Mahikari strives to achieve this aim by offering fervent prayers, following them up with an earnest practice, and then praying back to God, reporting back, practicing gratitude for all the blessings and arrangements that are bestowed on us by the parent God, practicing humility and uniting with others harmoniously, eliminating a heart of conflict that can stem from petty ego, envy, jealousy and judgment, practicing kindness and altruistic love, and protecting our precious environment, which is really crucial at this time. We've taken on initiatives such as in Senegal, the Sukhyo Mahikari organisation has been participating in a project planting a band of trees 3 miles deep and 4,350 miles wide below the widening Sahara Desert, all across the widest part of the continent. The aim of this project, known as the Great Green Wall, is to halt the desertification of the countries that are involved in this region. Also in 2013, in São Paulo, Brazil, they announced Sukhyo Mahikari Day for the 27th of February for our efforts that have contributed to the betterment of society over there. And in 2019, the Federative Republic of Brazil designated nationally Sukhyo Mahikari Day on the 27th of February. And also this year, with the new shrine that we've set up in Takayama, Japan, we've set in a small-scale hydroelectric power station which provides environmental friendly power to this shrine as well as to the township of Takayama. So we really try to unite with others and the environment to make it a better world. Sukhyo Mahikari has also been closely involved in youth education, building primary schools and providing assistance at orphanages. Now, I'd just like to conclude with the last paragraph that our spiritual leader gave at the opening address of this conference in 1989, the true nature of human beings and the need to promote spirituality. When we awaken to the fact that all human beings are by nature children of God, we will realise that we are all brothers and sisters, members of the same family. Thank you.
I'm going to switch the order of service around a little because Salim is not able to come today. He woke up with a nasty cold and decided he needed to go for a COVID test, not come to a public event. So if it's all right with Margaret, do you think we could do the interlude now? Because we've got two speakers to follow, and it just makes sense to me to do the interlude now and then have our next two speakers.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Esmond Dowdy. He grew up in Wolsey in South Australia on the Victorian border, left home at 16, as many of us did, went to Adelaide Boys High, studied Adelaide Uni, Adelaide Teachers College, snap. He began his working life teaching maths, science and Year 12 biology at Erbray, Christie's Beach, Woodville High School, and then trained for and was ordained as a minister in the Uniting Church and served in the country and city churches. Later he moved into higher education, working at Roseworthy and as manager of student services over five campuses of the University of South Australia, managing careers, chaplaincy, counselling, disability, overseas students, study schools and welfare services. He's been in retirement from 2010, but it's not very convincing because it says here he spent considerable time supporting refugees, mainly from African countries, and has been actively involved in the Progressive Christianity Network of South Australia, widely travelling. Of course, that stopped the last 2 years. He's a keen gardener and has an enduring commitment to social justice. He's been married 54 years, his wife's a musician, and with five children and eight grandchildren, there has never been a dull moment. Do welcome Esmond.
Well, thank you to the Multi-Faith Association for inviting me to be part of the panel this morning at this interfaith end-of-year celebration, and it is indeed an honour to be here. So let me begin by making it known that my predominant interfaith connection is through involvement with the Progressive Christianity Network of South Australia. And one of the goals of PCNet, I have a postcard here, which has the goals of PCNet, and one of the goals is to affirm the contributions of all faiths. So in a sense, PCNet has a multi-faith aspect to it. And certainly that aspect is expressed in all our activities. For the past 4 years, our major activity has been the Seminary of the Third Age, which some of you might know about. A program which offers opportunities to explore and reflect on questions of faith and spirituality for the 21st century. We have offered 16 presentations each year for the last 4 years, either as a gathering or as an online session, depending on COVID restrictions. Each year, the presentations have typically included interfaith dimensions. For example, in 2020, and this is the brochure for the presentations, the October sessions focused on perspectives of the multi-faith world. And these presentations included a presentation by Professor Muhammad Abdullah on what Islam can offer today's world. And we also had a session by Rabbi Shoshana Kaminsky on Judaism today. Now, Shoshana is speaking next. For those who may be interested, I will leave in the foyer on the table one of our postcards showing the goals of Progressive Christianity and a couple of brochures for the last 2 years, 2020 and 2021, showing you the kinds of sessions that we have. Now, getting to the topic for today, and Damien suggested that I might like to speak on "We are closer together," or "We are stronger together." And I will approach this in a very indirect way. I have always had an interest in gardening,
And as the introduction said, since retiring, I have many more opportunities to be involved in gardening activities. For example, I have joined the Cactus and Succulent Society of South Australia, and I never cease to be amazed at the great variety of succulents, different shapes, different textures, and different coloured plants. They can be green or grey or even nearly black, and even red-leafed. The diversity is amazing. And I belong to the Geranium and Pelargonium Society of South Australia, and I never cease to be amazed at the great variety of geraniums. A kaleidoscope of flower colours, a spectacular display of plants with different coloured leaves, and a stunning array of scented pelargoniums, such as peppermint, lemon-scented and citronella geraniums to keep mosquitoes away. Again, the diversity is amazing. And I also belong to the Fern Society of South Australia, with ferns showing an amazing diversity. It is estimated that there are 10,560 species of ferns, ranging from very tiny ferns, the adder's tongue ferns, the size of a fingernail, up to large tree ferns that can grow to 25 metres high. Now, in each of these groups of plants, there is extensive variety. And I am highlighting this, labouring this, because I want to relate it to the great variety of humankind on the planet, a great diversity of races and places throughout the world that they inhabit. But regrettably, the great diversity amongst human beings is most often not celebrated as a source of awe and wonder, but is often a source of conflict, of discrimination and disharmony. For example, differences in race, in ability or disability, differences in opinion, in politics, in faith positions, differences in ethnicity, in gender and in sexuality are often sources of serious conflict and disagreement. The current practices in the world across all kinds of differences are so far removed from the essence of being a faith community that this is a major shortcoming of society in general and faith communities in particular. And when we think of all the conflicts in the world, even in our own communities, all the polarizations, we as a multi-faith association have an onerous task to act as agents of reconciliation, as ambassadors for peace, creating an inclusive, welcoming community for people of diverse faiths. In preparing for today, I read a poem, a great statement by Gunga White, a yoga teacher. And in this statement he says, and you may have heard it, but it's a statement worth repeating, what if our religion was each other? If our practice was our life? If prayer our words? What if the temple was the earth? If forests were our church? If holy water the rivers, lakes, and oceans? What if meditation was our relationships? If the teacher was life? If wisdom was self-knowledge, if love was the centre of our being. What a great statement. And I also read an article by Brian Wiener, who provides commentary on that statement from Gunga White. On the one hand, he applauds the sentiments expressed in this statement as he seeks to discover for himself the essence, the common values enshrined in different faith positions, which would ultimately lead to seeing the world through the commonality of one earth and of one humanity. But on the other hand, he decries the daily practices that are so disparate from common faith values that they lead to conflict and discord. In this context, he says, the only way I can find my own peace with any of this is to continue to share wisdom from wherever I find it. I work to change the planet one thought at a time, and I hope that my simple work spreads so that others might eventually find their way into a more harmonious existence with one another. And he concludes his article with the immortal words of John Lennon. You might say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. Stronger together. Thank you. And I'll put a few copies of Gunga White's poem and that article by Brian Wiener on the table in the foyer if you'd like to collect them as you leave.
Our last speaker you may recognise, Rabbi Shoshana Kaminsky. She's served the synagogue on Hackney Road since 2006, is involved in all aspects of the congregation, from celebrating Shabbat with the youngest members of the monthly service to conduct and passing on ritual skills to visiting older members of the congregation. She's passionately committed to the central teachings of progressive Judaism and works hard to live out its values of egalitarianism and an ongoing dialogue between tradition and modernity. She is constantly seeking ways to make all aspects of Jewish life more relevant and exciting for Jews living in the modern world. She serves as treasurer of the Assembly of Rabbis and Cantors and locally as a board member of Jewish Community Services. She's regularly involved in programs and activities that build bridges between the Jewish community and the larger world. And you've probably noticed that every one of the religions represented today owes its roots in a way to Judaism. I noticed even Michael referred to the Bible. So there we go. We're going to end where a lot of this began. Thank you, Shoshana.
Hi. I realise it's sort of me standing between you and the savoury smells we've been experiencing this morning. So we've just concluded the festival of Hanukkah. It seems to be the only Jewish holiday that non-Jews know about because it comes in December, which we all know is the most important month of the year, right? Yes. Hanukkah is actually the least important of all the Jewish festivals. The books of Maccabees that chronicle the war that led to the creation of the festival was not actually included in the Jewish Bible. And so it's a post-biblical holiday. And for that reason, it's really, really low in the hierarchy of Jewish festivals. But because we have experienced the Christmasization of Hanukkah and people now give gifts, many kids do feel that it is, in fact, the most important of all of the festivals. So you may be familiar with the myth of the creation of Hanukkah, which actually dates to about 600 years after the original events of the wars of the Hasmoneans, and that is the idea that Hanukkah is an eight-day festival because when the temple was retaken from the Syrians and reconsecrated, there was only enough oil to burn for one day, but a miracle happened and the oil burned for 8 days. Have you heard this story? Raise your hand. Anybody? Yep. Yes. So as I said, the story first appears in the Talmud 600 years after the original event. So I'm sorry to burst your bubble, especially you, Anne. But yeah, it doesn't actually seem to have happened. Nevertheless, it's a great story. And so in the Talmud, there's a debate recorded between two Jewish teachers, Hillel and Shammai. Shammai says, on the first day of Hanukkah, you light 8 candles. And you take away one for each of the 8 days. Hillel says, on the first day of Hanukkah, you light 1 candle and you add one for each of the 8 days. And they each have their reasons for doing this related to the sacrifices that were offered in the ancient temple, with Shammai saying that with each passing day, there's fewer sacrifices left to offer, and Hillel saying with each day, there are more sacrifices behind you. A really beautiful interpretation of their teachings is Shammai says you light 8 candles on the first day and you take away one each day because with each of those 8 days, that oil burned a little more dimly. Hillel says you start with 1 candle and you burn them and you add one for each of the 8 days until you have 8 burning because with each day that the oil continued to burn, the miracle was greater and greater. So which one of them is correct? And the answer, I hope you'll appreciate, is they both are. And we have within the Jewish tradition this idea that there can be multiple right answers and multiple truths and multiple interpretations that are all valid. So even though we light our candles according to Hillel and not Shammai, we start with 1 candle and we add one on for each of the 8 days. Shammai's opinion is recorded in the Talmud, and we continue to study it 1,500 years, I guess 1,600 years later. And that's the case with all of Jewish tradition. We don't discard opinions as being false. We embrace multiple truths. So as it says in the Talmud, when somebody says, well, which is the correct answer? And it says, Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim. These and these are the words of the living God. So as we find ourselves in this era when opinions are so polarized, yes to vaccines, no to vaccines, yes to masks, no to masks, and we go from zero to extraordinarily angry. Does this happen to you? Extraordinarily angry. You start talking to somebody on the phone you've known for years and years, and suddenly they're telling you about how vaccines don't work and lockdowns are a conspiracy. And you may believe in the very, very depths of your being that science tells us that, yes, masks works and vaccines are good. But can you hear? Is there a little tiny bit of something to listen to in what the other person has to say? Because as soon as we discard everything that they say, we stop listening and we stop connecting. And it's in that connection that there is the possibility for transformation. So yes, just to clarify, I'm double vaccinated. I believe in masks. And I have had a few conversations with people who are anti-vaccination. And I've said, rather than saying, you're wrong, I say, well, you know, these are some articles that I've read. Let's look at these together and focus on the relationship. Yeah, you have a question.
I have a question. I have a point. We listen because we are people.
We listen because they are people, and because as we learn in Genesis chapter 1, every human being is made in the image of God, and we increasingly are losing that. We are increasingly living in a world that's divided into us and them, but we are all us. You know, even those that we violently disagree with, they are still us. So that's my thought for this morning.
That was a great note to finish on. I think we've all been somewhat frustrated with family members and close friends and so on who aren't as smart as to have exactly the same beliefs as we do. Anyway, I would like to thank all the speakers today and for battling traffic. I think Esmond came across North Terrace being all blocked up. Thanks for leaving the doors open. I think, Shoshana, you were the only one that traffic noise went over the top of very, very briefly. But we do have the doors open at this time to increase ventilation. It's basically the purpose of it. And that smell is getting to me, I'm afraid. So I think let's just cut through to the benediction, shall we? Would you like to stand? The words for the benediction today are taken from Anamkara, the book of Celtic wisdom written by John O'Donoghue. May the day never burden you. May dawn find you awake and alert, approaching your new day with dreams, possibilities and promises. May evening find you gracious and fulfilled. May you go into the night blessed, sheltered and protected. May your soul calm, console and renew you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.